All right. This lecture concerns material which we have already viewed. This lecture concerns material which we have already gone over. Its title could be said to be How Far South? Its title could also be the first lecture on auditing. Now, when we look at the business of auditing, we discover at once that the progress of an individual is measured and monitored by the upward swing of his affinity, reality, and communication ability. And when these things do not progress, we discover that the individual is not progressing as a case. We are trying to return to an individual his power to consider, his power of choice. His power of choice depends upon his relaxed frame of mind toward his fellow man. The relaxedness in the fields of trust, in the fields of confidence, and, of course, on the entire tone scale. Now, here we have, in auditing in general, the whole and entire picture of what we are doing with the preclear. There's no other picture of what we're doing with the preclear. We're not trying to make a preclear stand on his head easily or walk 4 feet off the ground. We're not trying to make a preclear do dozens and dozens of different odds and ends. All we're trying to do is raise his ARC. Nothing else. If you can learn that, you've learned everything about the reason why behind auditing. As long as an individual is unable to trust other individuals, as long as an individual feels he must safeguard himself against Lord knows what horrible intentions on the part of his fellow man, as long as an individual feels that he cannot communicate or is operating from the center of some basis that does not communicate, or as long as an individual is terrifically intolerant of stupidity to the degree that he'll stand there staring at a stupidity in a fine state of stupor, he cannot be counted upon to function, to act, to be himself in any way. All he's going to do is to be the mirror of things he faces. And eventually he will act as a compulsive duplicator, obsessive and compulsive duplicator of anything he faces. And if he were to go into a stupid society, he would be stupid. And if he'd go into a fairly bright society, he'd be bright. But would he originate anything or contribute anything to those brighter, stupid societies? In the stupid society, he wouldn't even contribute a new stupidity. You see this? His ability to communicate is the only thing that'll keep him going in a society which is knocking at him and pounding at him, hammer and tongs all the time. There's lots of motion in the society. There are a lot of particles moving around. There are particles that do all sorts of things, including collide with the individual's possessions, such as a body. Just another possession. And so, in the face of all of this motion and action and randomity, the individual can, as is, his considerations to the degree that he can communicate. He can handle and control things to the degree that he can communicate. And if he's working on the third dynamic at all, he'll be successful to the degree that he can communicate. And he'll keep going if he can communicate well. And he won't need any more auditing if he communicates well. And if you can get him out of the slough of despond on the thing and put him in communication with anything and everything. Therefore, he must be relaxedly capable of communicating with anything, anywhere, and making it communicate with him. And if he can do this, then there's no question of aberration, since any time he gets a confusion before him that he cannot immediately resolve, instantly, you know, he gets all kinds of problems coming up every day. These things at least will leave no residue. Why? He can communicate about them. He doesn't flinch from communicating with a confusion. If he doesn't flinch from communicating with a confusion, then he will continue to, as is, the pictures of those confusions which might occur around him. Now, that is the goal of auditing, to put an individual up to a point where his communicability with his environment is such as to, as is, any detrimental or non-survival characteristics in the environment. And if his communication is at that level, then he doesn't get into any further deep down, dredge deep, buried trouble. But he can handle the things he faces, and therefore he can play a game. You can't play a game if you're always afraid the football is going to hit you in the nose. And if you've been hit in the nose and you can still communicate, any picture made by the football hitting you in the nose will go poof. And on with the game. An individual, however, can be made to fall below the level of being able to communicate. And that is all that is wrong with your preclear. He cannot, as is, troubles as they come up. He cannot glance at these things and have them disappear. And being unable to do so, he then gets aberrated. And having gotten aberrated, he gets more aberrated. And having gotten more aberrated, he gets more aberrated and finally becomes a citizen. We don't expect that he go all the way down tone scale and become a general. But he'll hang up in some undesirable level where he feels that the best possible way to handle the society around him is to stay out of communication with it. The day he makes his first postulate to that end, he might as well hang him, because he will be hanged in the next few lifetimes. He will then stop as-ising, or knocking out, the pictures and patterns which are set upon him by the motion of these particles. Now, let me assure you, if you're going to play a game, there are going to be particles in motion. There's nothing wrong with particles being in motion. There's nothing wrong with cars going 80 miles in this direction and 80 miles at right angles. And not even anything wrong with cars hitting cars. But there's something, it is wrong about this, and that's getting convictions of great depth on the subject of the awfulness of the motion of particles or the stillness of particles, which then does not as is. And that is the condition that we are trying to avoid in the preclear. And when he says it's impossible to communicate that way, and he's stuck with it, and he can't reach this, and he can't communicate with that, then he can't solve his problems anymore. And he goes into a cumulative condition. One problem adds up to another problem, adds up to another problem, adds up to another problem, and the problems that add up become lighter and lighter to be deeper and deeper. And at length, he will get to the horrible state of walking off from the taxicab. He'll get into the terrifically worried condition of having forgotten to tip the driver. And he will worry about it all afternoon. Now, that's about how remotely you could be to a moving particle and worry about it. He paid the fare, but he forgot to tip the man. And the man might have looked at him a little crossly. Now, you see how we could do this? An individual who can have a very, very light lock laid into him, and not as is it, is then in a fair way to being in a solid mass of energy from which he cannot escape and through which he cannot see. All kinds of interesting things happen to him. Invisible particles come up and pack him all around. And these invisible particles then can be to some slight degree seen through. So he gets some glasses to let him see through them better. Black particles occur He knows these are dangerous. You never know what's in blackness. You just no idea what's in blackness. So he'd better not communicate with those black particles, and he'd better not communicate with blackness. In other words, his learning pattern then is learning what not to communicate with, like a safety program conducted on small children in schools. A traffic safety program. Now, by golly, if you wanted a bunch of bad, lousy, stinking, stupid, blind drivers, you would invent and originate and carry forward a safety program. If you want guys putting their hands in factories into bandsaws and sawing them off left and right and dropping crucibles of molten metal on the heads of their fellow workmen, for heaven's sakes, conduct a safety program. Oh, that's the thing to do. Show them what not to communicate with and talk about nothing else. You mustn't communicate with a roadway. You must stand on the curb until such and so and so and so is all this way and that way, and then having stood there for a while, why, you must then go forward only when the little boy with the whistle blows the whistle. Something of the sort, like they do in the States. Or until the bobby twists his wrist in some direction. And at that moment, you will be able to go across. And it's very, very necessary for you to wait there until that moment occurs. What's this kid, stupid? It says, don't communicate with the traffic. Communicate with the traffic control unit. In other words, transfer your thinkingness over to the tower. And more kids get killed this way. Now, I'll give you an example. In the Philippines, I've seen a little kid run through sawgrass. You see, I know that it's impossible to walk through sawgrass. It tears, it's tall, it's over your head, and it just tears your clothes to ribbons. It just tears them right off. It tears your boots off your feet. It finishes you. There's one thing you mustn't communicate with, sawgrass. And I have seen a little five-year-old kid in Luzon run at top speed through sawgrass and come out the other side without a scratch on him. I sent a little kid back to a village one time to get a pair of field glasses for me, and it was about a quarter of a mile, and we'd come by a very torturous trail, and he'd plodded along methodically, you know, why, man, crazy. And he'd followed me, and it was all right. We'd walked over this game trail, and I sent him back to the village, and he didn't take off on the trail. He took off right straight through the sawgrass. I said, well, that's the end of him now. A few minutes later, he pops back out of the sawgrass. Hands me my binoculars, and there wasn't a scratch on them either. You'd appreciate this if you realized that this stuff grows in packed masses. There's no way through it at all. You know, nobody educated that kid to stay clear of sawgrass. It wasn't necromancy. It wasn't that his body vaporized and passed through the sawgrass. It's just that he tuned up. This was moving particles. How do you handle a moving particle in relationship to moving particles? You handle it. You don't transfer to the chief of the village the rightness or wrongness of walking through sawgrass. You follow me? You just tune yourself up till you can handle it. All right, now the preclear who is made to vest all of his thinkingness and his preventingness and his non-communicatingness to some other area than his own responsibility is, of course, half dead already, because we taught him that you can't communicate. You have to communicate from some remote point. Something else has to communicate for you, and you mustn't communicate here, and you mustn't communicate there. And you better not communicate someplace else. Police are always hard at work trying to educate you not to communicate with them. They labor at this. You walk into a police station, you have a complaint, your wallet disappeared. And you talk to them for a little while, and although they're courteous about the thing usually, they're not quite sure that you ever had a wallet. And they're not quite sure that your suspicions of this other person are founded upon just a wallet. You know, there's probably something else going on here, one way or the other. You get the idea? And you'll kind of find yourself, at least to some degree, in the freest country in the world with police, under a slight cloud. You know? And in a fascist country, You walk into the police station to report something, you poor fool. And maybe you'll never walk out again. You go in and you say, I left my car parked at 9th and Main. And I came back and picked it up, and it was gone. And its license number is, and they say, just a moment. Left your car parked at 9th and Main. Which side of the street? On the south side, right there by the drugstore. Do you realize that that's a 12-minute parking zone? How long was your car parked there? Oh, just a few minutes. You sure it wasn't parked there 15 minutes? Well, I suppose it was. You realize that's a 12-minute zone. Here's a ticket. You will in vain try to report something to them because they are a non-communicating ferocity. A country is thus left without a police force. The police, in collusion with criminals continually, simply start taking things over, and eventually they find some arch-criminal for a dictator, and away we go. And their game has now reversed itself. Instead of the good citizen tackling the criminals, why, the criminals are now attacking the good citizens. We have what is a fascism. We've already seen that happen in our lifetimes. We have been ducking hot metal. All of us, I'm sure. Because of this fact. A police system got set up, which was a non-communicating sore, you might say, in the middle of the society. And you no longer could communicate with it. You were punished for communicating with it. And the less you could communicate with it, why, the worse it got. Until you had a third dynamic aberration of the highest magnitude. By setting up what? By setting up a non-communicating unit. Anytime you set up a non-communicating unit anywhere in the society, or set up, it's plainly visible, but it's non-communicating, see? You can't communicate to it. It doesn't communicate to you. Anytime you set this up, you get then and there the beginnings of an aberration. Because something in the entirety of the dynamics has struck bottom. Something has struck bottom. And when you see things in a society starting to drop out of communication, watch it. If that hits bottom, something else in the society will hit bottom. Something else will hit bottom. You see, and we have terminals standing around which are uncommunicating terminals. The natural result of this sort of thing is more prisons, more asylums, more communication barriers of one kind or another, greater security, greater censorship. You might ask why a government such as Russia would engage in security at all. Why would it engage in security? It's a silly thing to engage in anyhow. During the war recently passed, a couple of wars ago, or one or two wars ago, one loses track of these wars. A setup of this character begins. You start putting everything in code. And one night, first night I'd been on the beach for a very, very long time, I was suddenly called back to the ship after I'd been ashore about a half an hour and brought back to the ship to decode a top secret all fleet dispatch. And I had to be called back because it was in the captain's safe. And not even the coding officer had a copy of this code. Boy, was this secret. It was so secret that the guy who originated it didn't even know what he was saying. And I decoded this arduously. You understand, I hadn't had any rest to amount to anything for ages, been at sea and so on. I decoded this. And when I finally got through with it, it said, no dogs will be allowed in New Zealand. And it had been super-coded because it was really destined for a convoy, and nobody wanted to inform the enemy that a convoy was going to New Zealand because, you see, there was no war in the South Pacific. We'd only been at war down there about a year. Well, we can understand that people shouldn't go around bragging to submarines that merchantmen are going to be sit there to be shot at, but the submarines had no slightest difficulty in locating merchantmen. All he had to do was put up a periscope and see a merchantman and fire. I mean, it was simple. And with this and other activities of this character and nature, I've had several, by the way, dispatches in clear, which were terribly important because the codes had been compromised, refused by a naval command because they were not in code. They were an emergency nature and there were no codes. All the codes had been compromised in the area I was in. And so they couldn't receive, of course, the message because it wasn't secret enough. Get the idea how they can go? And we agreed, finally, about halfway through the war amongst us, that this decoding and encoding and recoding and P-coding was a very, very interesting activity. And it might or might not be doing anything to the enemy, but it was certainly raising hell with us. I remember being called out of bed one night at about 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. I got to bed at 2 on watch and so forth, and the communication officer was whispering in my ear, "The cancellation word is mundo." I said, "Huh?" He said, "Mundo has just come over as a receive, communicate to 3 officers and destroy dispatch to invalidate cogwheels 86, 32, and 49, or some such numbers, on the electric coding machine." I says, "Huh?" And he said, this is very important because you'll have to remember the word. We're now going to destroy the dispatch. So that when that word is sent out worldwide, then these cogwheels are supposed to be thrown over the side as having a compromised code, you see. Well, I don't know what it did to the rest of the officers in the United States Navy when that word came over that night, but it cost me some sleep. Because I got so damn mad, I sat there and spat between my boots for a half an hour. Mundo. I said, "Throw the coding machine over the side for all I care." It's quite interesting. What happens when you've got this much code? What happens when you've got this much non-communication? What happens when you've got this much delay? Men die and ships sink. That's what happens. And they probably kill more men and sink more ships and slaughter more armies by having a super code system where you can incautiously blat out your brains that the enemy can then decode in the next hour or two anyhow. You probably kill more men that way just by slowing down all communication lines than you ever would if you sent every dispatch in clear to Imperial headquarters. You see? There is such a thing, then, as stopping a communication line. Now, the reason we're talking about this in the third dynamic, I want to show you what goes on with a PC right there in his immediate environment. He gets security happy. He thinks he would become a social pariah if he dared communicate on this subject or that subject or some other subject. And Freud, in 1894, recognized this. He added a lot of other stuff to it, but he said, it's the guilt complex of this individual. If he just simply said, it's the non-communication of this individual which is throwing him out of communication, he would have had something. And all he'd have done, instead of saying it's your little sister's raping your grandmother's aunt or something, is the basic cause of your difficulty and throwing the fellow on the back track and all that sort of thing, he simply would have said, okay, then the answer to this is communication. More communication. Now let's find out what communication is, and he would have had a workable process. You see this? So in an essence of simplicity here, in a very simple statement here, anything that compromises affinity or a specialized type of affinity, affection, trust, relaxedness, serenity, anything that actually is concerned with what really is true, the reality corner, is monitored by that C corner. And as that communication is less and less possible, so is affinity less and less possible. So is reality less and less possible as such. Reality merely becomes a solidity. It doesn't become a truth. And we get things going downscale at a rapid rate. Now, if you understand how, then, in a large area, such as a navy or a war or a government, you could get points dropping out of communication and eventually bring people out of communication with everything, if you can understand how that could occur, and that then would be followed with lessened trust. Not that lessened trust is followed by communication breaks, but the communication breaks are followed by lessened trust. Get this right in, too, please. The other is just figure. We have all this security because we don't trust somebody. That is not the way it goes. There are communication breaks, therefore we get lessened trust. We're hung with the fact that every man, if you can find him, and where he sits, is himself of good intention. But he starts dramatizing the bad intention referred to him by somebody else, and we then have something that's apparently bad-intentioned. The individual is not bad-intentioned, and therefore we never discover anyone who is bad-intentioned. We keep looking for the bad-intentioned fellow in the midst of all this, and we can't find him. And the unknownness of the bad intention itself creates a tremendous mystery. So we get the lessened communication terminals, their lessened communicability, pursued by lessened trust, lessened confidence, lessened knowingness, and we get, at the same time, less and less reality on what's going on. So we get more and more perversion of data, less and less communication, more and more distrust, and we eventually get everything looking very like an insane asylum. You can see how this would be on the third dynamic. All right, let's take a smaller look, the microcosm of the thing. Let's take a look at the PC, and let's find out that lessened communication to various parts of his body has brought about lessened trust and lessened reality, which brings about lessened desire to communicate, which brings about lessened trust, which brings about less reality, which brings about less desire to communicate and less communication, which brings about greater distrust and greater unreality and hallucination. Until we finally have a fellow who, if he saw an ice cream cone, would tell you it was an ogre. He'd look at some nice old lady, and she was offering him a piece of pie, and he would immediately whip out a gun and hold her at bay. So we get terrific unrealities going on. More and more duress instead of communication. Communication particles are getting more and more solid and going faster. And we'd finally get into a situation where the individual didn't even know that he didn't know. Now, there is your pre-clear. Areas of his environment have followed this cycle. Areas within his own beingness have followed this cycle. This individual, then, is in this condition. His trust factor is shot. Therefore, his confidence shot. His ability to believe in anything goes. His reality is poor, which means his perception, the entire subject of perception, is over on the R corner of the triangle. Sight, sound, and all the rest of it, the ability to record. They're also over here on the C corner. They depend terrifically on that A corner. So we have somebody who has a tremendous break of affinity with his environment, getting into the fascinating thing of being deaf, dumb, blind, and stupid. Gets a terrific break. Immediately after a terrific break, he goes out of communication, and you have a non-communication incident. When all these non-communication incidents are compounded into a time track, we have a preclear. You see how it happens. It is as simple as this, and it's remedied as simply as this. Now, how far south do you have to go, actually? We have here rudiments of auditing. One is the awareness of the auditor, the auditing room, that a session is in progress, and that the preclear is being audited. Now, we've headed all those under one, since it is a single condition that certainly must exist before we can have an auditing session. But it actually is several factors. And these factors are awareness of the auditor. There must be awareness of the auditor. There must be some communication ability possible with the auditor, or no auditing can be done. And if the person isn't aware of the fact that the auditor is an auditor, the reality of the thing is shocked, so we don't have very much terminal there, you see, and so we don't get any auditing. As far as the auditing room is concerned, an auditing room can be anything, but it is the area in which he's being audited. And he isn't being audited 8 miles above Earth, or in the mines of Cornwall. He's being audited in an auditing room, and there's no telling where this man really sort of is, or where he thinks of himself as being, and there's no sense in auditing him unless you audit him in the auditing room. Now, you can take him from the auditing room and send him someplace else, but for heaven's sakes, start with a place to start. Maybe the first area he's ever started from for the last million years, you know. He started from this auditing room. But I'm right here. Now I'm going to go from here and we're going to do things, right? So getting him oriented there is very important. That a session is in progress. In other words, that you're going to do something with this individual. That something is going to go on here. Now that a session is in progress, what is a session? Then session has intentions. It is a series of actions and communications between two people toward certain definite goals and so on. And you could discuss goals and session and all kinds of things under that. But what is an auditing session? Preclear may have some kind of a weird notion. You'd be surprised. He may have a notion that at any moment you're going to whip out a turban and read his fortune. You know what you're doing. You certainly better find out. You'd be amazed that this happens. You know? Doesn't know what to expect. And that the preclear is being audited. Now, you can give him a demonstration of what auditing is and then follow it up with some auditing. But if you give him a demonstration, don't then continue to give the demonstration and think you're giving the fellow a session. I've seen auditors do this. They try to sneak up on the preclear by giving him a demonstration of how it goes and then never shifting gears. The preclear keeps waiting for the session to begin. You might as well tell him sometime along the line the session's begun. Furthermore, if you're not really going to audit somebody, if you're just chatting at him and coffee shopping him, you know, coffee shop auditing, and so what? Well, for heaven's sake, don't start the session. Tell him so every now and then. This is not auditing. You know? We're just fooling around. We'll keep him very alert. See? That establishes the reality of the thing. And if you tell him that you're not auditing him, that you're discussing something, and you may be phrasing the discussion with several auditing questions on a two-way communication basis, it keeps him from dropping out of sight on you. And he never establishes your altitude and goes into your control, and you walk out of the coffee shop and he kind of walks out with you, but he's still sitting at the table. Get the idea? So a session is in progress or it isn't in progress. It's not something that should be left in the air. Audit people on buses and any place you want, but don't put it into session. Unless, of course, you're going to put it into a full, complete session to the bitter end. You get the idea? All right. Now, of course, an auditor isn't worth two whoops and a collar button if he can't carry on a two-way communication with the preclear and get the preclear to originate, and he himself originate, on various subjects. Now, this is an interesting state, trying to conduct a session where no communication is possible from a preclear. Fascinating business. But it's a slow pull. So two-way communication on a casual basis must be able to exist. And when I say casual basis, that is put in there to keep anybody from jumping the gun and trying to go into mechanical two-way communication or trying to do anything arduous or trying to set up things in a chop-chop. This is the way we've got to do it, and put it on a formula basis with the preclear, who then stays on a sort of a formula basis from there on and really never talks to the auditor. A lot of preclears go into an artificial session, and they give an artificial two-way communication. They're not really talking about anything they would talk about ordinarily. They become another person, so to speak, in the auditing session. They often become the person who sits down in the dental chair and gets operated on. They often become a patient. And then they switch off that valence at the end of the session. You haven't audited the pre-clear all the way through. You've audited some kind of a valence or another. It's quite interesting. You have to be able to communicate with the pre-clear on as casual a basis as you would communicate with anybody else. And as a friend, you must realize that casual basis is necessary there. Three, the delivery of the question. There's a lot of ways you can deliver the question. Awful lot of ways you can deliver the question. You can two-way communicate on any Scientology process, if you know how. You can, and you deliver the question in this fashion on a two-way communication basis. In other words, you don't hammer and pound this question. You just hand it out and talk about it, and hand it out and talk about it. Or you sit there and you acknowledge his answers and you hand it out as an auditing question, which is one of these super profound auditing questions that's going to run out every circuit in the joint before you get through. See, that's another way to present the auditing question. But what kind of a way, what method are you going to use to present this auditing question to this particular pre-clear? Well, you got to make up your mind. Are you going on a two-way communication basis with this pre-clear only, which would be one way of presenting it? Or are you actually auditing him with a question, making it do a lot of work for you? And if you're auditing him with a question, and that question is the bulk of the communication and so forth, then there's certain exact ways you have to go about it. Two things you can do here, but they're both dissimilar. They are not the same thing. Four is communication lag. When you've pitched a pre-clear question, or when you've made a remark to him and you start getting communication lags off of him, you know that you are doing with him something which is productive of an end result if you continue it. Now, let's say we're talking to a pre-clear who has communication lag in his casual conversation. The process then to run on him is casual conversation. That's the communication lag. Now, the communication lag is actually in time, the exact time between the asking of the question and receiving an answer to that question. There are specialized lags, such as the exact time necessary for the pre-clear to originate, to think up and originate a communication. You'll see him walking around kind of foggily for a long time, and he'll finally look at you kind of embarrassedly and say, "It's a nice day, isn't it?" See something on this order? He's monkeyed all this time just to originate a question. That's a kind of a special lag then, isn't it? He has an origin. He has originated in the last 5 years three communications. So you see, this is a specialized lag. All right. This is very important. You must acknowledge the pre-clear's replies or actions. These must be acknowledged. You say, "All right, fine, and okay." Now, there's a great deal of mechanical acknowledgement that can go on. You can set up a circuit that every time the pre-clear says something, you say, "Okay, fine." He says, "I feel terrible today," and you say, "Okay, fine." And you wonder about in 5 minutes from now why the pre-clear is not working with you. Acknowledge it within the reality of the statement. Acknowledgement because you heard it. And if you didn't hear it, don't acknowledge it. Make him say it again. Get the idea? Now, it actually is of importance to you, some of the things he's telling you. You're not just listening to these things just to... So he'll answer the question, he gave me the answer, and so I acknowledged it, and they gave me the answer. He's liable to put the doggondest things in there. I did this just now, but there were two red comets that just went through my head, and they have left a very deep burning sensation. And you say, "Okay, fine," and present the question again, then wonder why your pre-clear drops through the bottom. He originated something he thought was terribly important, was very important to him, possibly is important. You certainly better handle it with two-way communication right then and there and let him tell you all about it if you expect to have a pre-clear who is still a pre-clear sitting in that chair. The one way I know of to ruin a pre-clear is to fail to take up and discuss origins about the last thing the pre-clear does Well, that is to say, the thing he does most poorly is originate communication. And when he says, two comets just went through my skull, he sometimes is originating really his only communication in the session. And you didn't acknowledge it. And this just throws him into apathy at once. The formula's so overbalanced already. You're originating, and then he originates once, and then you don't acknowledge sufficiently what he originated. And he just goes through the bottom. Formula just overbalances itself. He goes into apathy instantly. I've seen this happen time and time again. About the worst trick you can do. Now, sometimes he merely flinches. You consider that an originated communication. And you say, okay, what happened? As though he'd said something. And he say, well, nothing except first somatic I've ever had. It went up through one heel and went out my left ear. And feels pretty dreadful. It's very distracting. He's liable to get so introverted on a somatic or something like that that he'll do remarkable things with the somatic and about the somatic. He's liable to sit there figuring on this somatic for the next 15 or 20 minutes and answering with some other section of himself your questions. Got the idea? You don't have a whole pre-clear all of a sudden. You only have part of one. The rest of him is involved in some fashion with something that happened. If you talk about it, he'll release it and you'll put him back into session again. So when things happen to him, if he just flinches, or he blinks, or he grits his teeth, or he says something to you, you consider it all in the same bracket, an originated communication, and you talk about it, you acknowledge it sufficiently, and you discuss it so as to remove it out of the realm of the unknown, and don't ever give him the feeling he's neglecting you. Now, six, the duplication of that exact question. This applies only when we're using an auditing question on a repetitive basis. And when we do that, we don't change its wording around. We say, all right, spot that man, we said. Let's say that's an auditing command. It isn't. But you say, spot that man, spot that woman, spot Joe, spot Bill, spot the person at the end of the row. It is not, according to the rules, to say, now spot that man, all right, now look over that woman, now see if you can see that fellow down at the end of the row. Get the idea? The difference of wordings make him figure out every time what you are saying. And if he's involved with this problem, don't put the added strain of super significance on this fellow. You just use the same auditing question. Whatever the question is, if it's an auditing question, you repeat the question. And this will grate on his nerves and then cease to grate. Now, there's another reason for this. It's because the auditor, by repeating, can repeat out of a person's bank certain words. For instance, you could say, it's a boy, it's a boy, it's a boy to people for a half an hour, and they would wind up in birth. Men would. If you say it's a girl's a girl, it's a girl, why, for a long time, why, you would repeat people, I said a half an hour, that's too long, for 10 minutes, you'd repeat a girl back in her birth. In other words, the auditor can do repeater technique on the pre-clear. It's quite interesting. I mean, it doesn't have to be the same person, see, using the repeater technique that has the restimulation. The auditor can use this. Well, after you've used an auditing question for a half an hour, 45 minutes, you've probably nulled the significance of those very words so that their meaning is coming through unaltered. And if we've got to have an auditing question, let's use it on a repetitive basis so that we run out any other significance than its significance as an auditing question. And sometimes this doesn't occur for the first hour of use. The fellow's still fumbling with this thing. Think a thought. Let's see, he means think. Think. I suppose that's an action of my brain. And a thought. That's probably a product of something. A thought. All right, let's see. Think a thought. Well, let's see now. Think. That means... Get the idea? Well, the fellow, after an hour, will finally get to a point where he means I must perform an action which produces some kind of an idea. And he's got that now. And he waded through all this other. Well, you see that you'd never do this if you said, think a thought, dream up something, figure it out. You get the idea. And you just you have new words all the time. Auditors always believe they have to be more interesting than they have to be. Believe me, the preclear finds himself very interesting. You don't have to be very interesting. But most people in running group processing err in changing the process because when there's that many people sitting out in front of them, they feel they have to be interesting. They re-stimulate stage or something. And they have to be interesting, so they don't give them the most elementary processes. They give them too many processes too fast. And as a result, they stick a lot of people on the track. All right. It's very interesting, isn't it, then, as we look over the rudiments of auditing, to discover that we have already answered the question of how far south. If there's any further south to go, below the level of spot a person, as given as the first step of level one, or spot an object as the alternate, slightly lower. If there's any further south to go than that, it is into the ramification of establishing one or more of the rudiments. And if you are confronted with a preclear who has to be audited below spot an object or spot a person, if you have to audit a preclear below that level, then all you do is pick up one rudiment in one of the rudiments. Number one of the rudiments. Just pick up one of them and start working it over until it's established. And then establish another one. And with a cycle, it might take you 25 hours of work to establish all of part one of the rudiments. And that is the way you go south. You go south by establishing the rudiments. And when you've got them all established, you have him notice objects or people. You got it? Now, this then, to some slight degree, might make you feel as though you're left in the never-never land. It just might make you feel like there's no absolute set process here. There's no magic incantation or formula by which you do this. Well, there can't be any further formula than this for the good reason that you've got a preclear who is cherishing greatly his unpredictability and who is changing all over the place obsessively or who is statically standing still. And the first action in his improvement is to get him to discover that there's somebody else there, namely you. Now, you don't have to establish the rudiments of the session with anything like the thoroughness that you will be able to establish them on the normal preclear after 15 hours of auditing. You'll still be establishing the rudiments after 15 hours of auditing. You will. But you don't have to establish them arduously. You very easily establish them much better. He is more aware of you as an auditor. He is more aware of the fact that he's in session. He is more aware of the fact that he's a preclear. He's more aware of the fact that auditing is in progress when it is in progress. Do you know when you first start him out on a lot of preclears that you'd say are in pretty good shape, for 2 or 3 hours after the session, they're still being audited. No matter how careful you are. Well, that's certainly by the time you've gone 10, 15 hours, right? When they're finished being audited, they finish being audited. Sometimes I've seen this work out in an hour. You know? An hour of processing puts him beyond that. But if we chewed away on his case and did it poorly, some fashion, right? For a couple of hours after the session, he'd still be chewing on the session. He'd still be meshed with the session. Well, that's certainly being audited when he's not being audited, isn't it? Well, if he did that, then he wasn't being audited very much while he was being audited. You get the idea? His awareness of the period of time in which auditing was occurring was poor, so that he slopped over. That's all that amounts to. And as you go on processing him, you, of course, recover to him greater and greater ability to recognize you and the session and the auditing room. In fact, he's being audited. You see, this is all easier to establish the further you go. But when you are trying to establish a session and you look at any of these things, any of these factors, and find that they are markedly missing, you'll do very well to spend a little time on them with two-way communication as much as you can manage. The individual doesn't have to be in good two-way communication to start auditing. But you had certainly better handle some of these factors. I'll give you an example of a case who didn't particularly want processing, but received processing from another quarter than she really expected. She didn't really want processing. Curiosity, a little bit of curiosity, that was about all. And the case was run on spotting people and spotting objects, and the person became very, very bored and very upset, and they didn't want to do it, and so forth. And a discussion with this person, after about 6-8 hours of auditing had occurred, discovered this interesting fact, that the auditor had never really established a session. What had he omitted? What had this auditor omitted? Freakler was not gaining. Something then must have been missing in the rudiments, and something was missing in the rudiments. Skepticism on the subject of Scientology itself was the stable datum from which this person was being audited. And they were being audited at best to stand off at some vast distance and wonder whether or not anything was ever going to happen. You talk about transferring action to some other sphere. Skepticism of the subject did not have any expectancy, not only no goals in life, but no expectancy that anything could ever exist that would ever do anything for anybody. And prided herself a great deal upon being a skeptical person. Of course, you and I can look at this and we can see that this person must be pretty psycho. Must be. You lay in front of somebody the ability to attain a greater ability and to attain some goals, to live better, and this person cannot even vaguely take any advantage of it of any kind whatsoever. We look into this person's life and we find this person has no use for anything. There's nothing useful in this person's life. We're pounding on an empty drum. But at the same time, what was the entrance? The entrance was two-way communication about Scientology and doing something about the mind. We didn't have to convince this person any, but for heaven's sakes, we had to do something about it. We had to get some trace one way or another. Some trace of where all of this skepticism comes from. Now, we find out, if we wanted to search it over, this person isn't skeptical of Scientology, just Scientology. This person is skeptical of medicine, naturopathy, homeopathy, skeptical of pills, skeptical of healing, skeptical of wounds, skeptical of pie, skeptical of donuts, skeptical of coal trucks, skeptical of mothers, skeptical of cats. See? Because a case that's doing this and starting that hard must be doing a terrific identification. Well, to some degree, we have to be skillful enough to lighten this up. You see that? So they won't get into a, well, I'll just see what happens, you know? You've got to have somebody participating in the auditing session or nothing will occur. Why don't you have them hold out their right hand and you audit that, huh? You'll get further. 5,000 hours from then, you'll still be auditing the hand. It'll probably be missing by this time. But you still will not have done anything for the person. You follow me? So we had to take up what really amounted to the auditor's present time problem. And the auditor's present time problem is always the preclear when a session begins, and therefore we have to examine what factor in this problem is, one, going to hold up the works, and two, can be attacked. And we hold it up on the basis of creating a session. No matter how poorly or indistinctly or indefinitely, we still create a session somehow or another. We bring about an awareness of the auditor. We bring about the awareness of the preclear that the preclear is a preclear. Not that the right hand is a preclear. See, we talk about this. We talk about their identity with regard to this auditing session. We talk about what is auditing, what is to be expected from auditing. We get their minds at ease on this, and then we get them aware of the fact that they're being audited when they're being audited, not that you're just going to start in 5 minutes. And then the end of the session comes along. You think you've given them a session. They were waiting all this time to be audited. Being audited, you find out, by definition, is balancing a card on the end of your nose. I mean, they're liable to define it anyway, you know, but it's way out there someplace, and it's totally unreal. You should tell them, if they are this way, you are now being audited. Oh, this is awfully stupid, it sounds. But all you're auditing is stupidity. Stupidity, which is a breakdown of the triangle. Now, the ARC triangle at the top is knowingness, pure knowingness. And this knowingness becomes affinity, reality, and communication. And this becomes, in turn, involvements and distrusts and miscommunications and inabilities of one kind or another. And this, in turn, becomes not knowing that there's anything to know about anything anywhere. And that's the way that thing looks. It goes from a peak here to the triangle, and then downscale to a black piece of mud. And I'm sure that the scientist is not talking from reason when he's talking about man came from mud. I'm sure he's looking at his own bank because it looks like black mud. Now there is the cycle of auditing. From a standpoint of that, you pick the fellow up low down on this scheme, and you boost him well up on this scheme. And the first knowingness that you establish is that sessions happen and that things happen. And I wouldn't sit there and start proving it to somebody one way or the other, but I would at least talk to them until their hope sparked a little bit in some line, somewhere. I don't care how I did that. Wouldn't matter. So you see, there's a certain looseness observable in establishing the rudiments of auditing. But the only real mistake you can make is in not establishing. That's a real mistake. Any other little boo-boos that you make in the direction of establishing them are nothing. They're probably acceptable to the preclear as high feats. You get the idea? They may be thinking, this is awfully right of this person. Must be awfully right of this person to have made that mistake. You get the idea? Now, in establishing these things, then, your own ability to observe the preclear, your own knowledge of the subject at large, your own ability to communicate and invite the participation of the preclear in communication in this act known as auditing is the paramount and primary thing. And when you have a preclear who isn't responding to the low levels of process or the upper levels, it doesn't matter, but the preclear just is not progressing, you know where you're wrong. You're wrong because you didn't go far enough south. And how far south do you go? To establishment of the rudiments of the session. Now, the lot of us, by putting our heads together and adding up a lot of our data and experience, could undoubtedly bring about a considerable amount of material on how we've gone about starting sessions with this one or that one. We've all dealt with this one way or the other. There are probably 10,000 million ways to start sessions. But they simmer down simply to establishing some ARC with a preclear. And the best way to establish that for the purposes of auditing is to find awareness of the auditor, the auditing room, sessions in progress, and frequently being audited. Using two-way communication on a casual basis, delivering the question in a way not calculated to upset the free clear. Observing his communication lag on any subject, and if it's not just his standard lag, but if his lag improves or lengthens on any particular subject, talk about it for a moment. You started talking about it, you better finish talking about it with him. And always acknowledge what he says in reply to your question, and for heaven's sakes acknowledge his originated communication, and if you're delivering auditing questions, deliver them as exact duplicates in order to, as is, their significance in the bank, and bring him up to an awareness of just that auditing question, and go on and ask it. And if you do these things successfully, you'll really be an auditor. Thank you.